Test Iyar, Friday the 13th of May, Rabbi Leibish Heller, the Chashivas of Torah.
Yeah, Rabbi Isai, it was advertised on the Tzetlach that I'm going to speak on Parshas Bahar. However, I'm sorry to disappoint you, I'm actually going to speak... I'm going to speak on something that will be read tomorrow, not Bahar, but B'chukoy Isai, that's okay. And it's actually a benefit, like this you can have it on your minds for the whole week, as opposed to only till... Yeah. So the pasuk says, "Im b'chukoy se teilechu, ves mitzvoy se tishmeru v'asisa moiso." If it should be the case that you should go in the way of my statutes, we'll see in Rashi that it refers to limud haTorah, and you should perform the mitzvahs and do them, then what will be the consequence, what will be the reward? Says the pasuk, "V'nasati gishmeichem v'ito." I will give you rain in its right time. V'nos na'aretz yevula, v'eitzaso de'item period. The field will give their yield, and the trees will give its fruit.
But I'd say, instead of if, when.
When, okay, yes, yes, yes. Yeah. So, okay, so this is the reward. What is the reward for Lima Datari? You're going to have rain, your field is going to produce, and your trees are going to deliver. And we don't underestimate the importance of these things because our survival is dependent on them. But here is the question. Surely there is more reward for Limud HaTorah than just the fields and the trees and the rain. How about a Ruchnius reward? Limud HaTorah is rewarding on many levels. On many levels. First of all, the Schar Noilam Habo is one discussion why that's not mentioned here, but that's not the issue. But why mention only the physical reward? Why not the Ruchnius rewards? No mention is made of anything other than physical things, technical things. Now there's one answer that's given as follows. And it goes like this. It says, listen, the emphasis is that we are supposed to learn, ideally, we are supposed to learn Torah Lishma. We are supposed to be Talmidim and Mishamshim Sarav, Shaloy al Manas Lakadu Pras. So the truth of the matter is that Torah shouldn't be discussing any rewards. If we were in an ideal state, if each of us lived up to our true potential, we would be altruistic, totally dedicated, idealistic. This is the MS. You do it because it's MS. Because there's nothing greater than this. Not because there's any level of reward, spiritual or physical. And therefore, it would logically lead that the Torah shouldn't mention Schar. The only reason the Torah has to mention Schar is because some of us are not perfect. And we are motivated by our own self-interests. I talk for myself. My apologies. I didn't mean us in this room. I meant some people in the human race. The people of my caliber. And as such, you need to have that external motivation. Otherwise, you're not going to do it. Now, if the Torah is already motivating someone who's not motivated, it talks about the lowest level, the person whose appeal is not, the Ruchnius doesn't appeal to him. You're going to tell him that through Torah he's going to have Dveikus HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not, that doesn't do it. You tell him his trees are going to deliver more fruits than they did last year, he'll go to this year. So that's an explanation. That the Torah is really only, it's like Dibra Torah Kineged Yetzer Hara. The Torah is talking about people who are not living up to standard. And for them, the schar that we choose is the schar gashmi. But the truth is, there's a problem with this pshat. First of all, what about someone who wants a schar ruchni? Someone who's not on the level of lishma, but would be motivated not by his trees. He would be motivated by knowing that this is the most rewarding thing for his neshama. The most rewarding thing for his ruchnius, for his spiritual growth. What about that person? We're abandoning him. We're not giving him that motivation. We're assuming you're either all the way lishma, or if you're not lishma, the only thing that speaks to you is your trees and your fields. There are people who are somewhere in the middle. And for them, if we're going to talk about schar, it should be a schar ruchni. That's number one. But number two, and even more importantly, how about the person who learns lishma? A person who learns Torah lishma, a person who has no interest in his fields, and even such a Baal Madrega that even telling him of all the ruchniistic benefits that Torah entails is not a factor for him. For him, what matters is that this is the Ratzon Hashem, and this is the MS, and this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from me, and I am an Eved, a Meshamesh, a Sharav, Shaloyal, Manas, Lakab, Pras. So what is he supposed to do with these Pesukim and Pashas B'chukaisa? What meaning does it have for him? What significance? Yes.
It's
correct. 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 And the Rambam says that this is one of the Yud Gimel Ikrei Ho'amuno. Schar Vo'inesh is one of the 13 Ikrei Ho'amuno. So someone who's a Baal Madrega only has 12 Ikrei Ho'amuno. He doesn't need the 13th. He's for him 12 suffice. It seems that there's more to this message of schar than simply motivating you to do or not to do. There's something in this parasha that tells us the koyach and the power of Torah. Not only that this should be the reason why you do it. And the message here is equally applicable to someone who was at the very highest level and someone who's in the middle or at the bottom. You want to know what Torah is, says the Pasuk. Torah has the power to make your trees grow. Torah has the power to make your fields deliver. It has the power to give you rain. Why is that significant and why does that matter? Shouldn't it be a bigger indication of the koyach of Torah is that Torah can elevate you to levels that no other species can ever achieve? Why is it that giving rain is a stronger indication of Torah's koyach than the ruchniestig rewards that we are very well aware of that result from learning Torah? It's true, that's for sure.
He needs it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, on one level, that's certainly true. Yeah, but the other things also have value. So Rabbi said, I want to share with you a mashal that's brought in the Zoya, and forgive me if it sounds a little esoteric, but I'll try. It's simple, really. And the mashal is allows us to understand what Torah is, and really from here we take a definition of our relationship with Torah. What is Torah to a Yid? A person is comprised of a guf and a nefesh. A guf and a nefesh. Right? You don't have to be a believing person to know this. You have a guf and a nefesh. There's an energy, there's a source of life, a life force that is embodied by the guf. And the guf, even if it's fully perfect, without the nefesh pulsating in it, is just nothing. Now, the nefesh is further divided into two categories. One is called the koichos hanefesh, and the other is called the chayus of the nefesh. Right? I'm aware that we have a doctor over here, so I have to be careful, make sure I know what I'm saying. There's the koichos hanefesh, and there's the chayus hanefesh. What is the difference between the koichos and the chayus? The koichos are faculties that we have. You have the koich ha-ri'iyah, you have the koich ha-shmiyah, you have a koich of seichel, you have a koich to feel things emotionally. You have the koich ha-tenuah, to move, movement. All of these things are really of service. They are facilities. They are utilities of the nefesh itself. In other words, if God forbid, chas v'shalom, a person doesn't have koyach hariyah, he's missing a koyach. But his nefesh is still there. He's still a chai. Each one of these specific powers are means that the nefesh has to express itself to function on the highest level. But they don't define, they don't make up what the nefesh actually is. The nefesh is the general chai, is the fact that you're alive. That is what the chayus of the nefesh is. Now, each one of these koichos have a different part of the guf that is a keli for that chayus. So, for example, the eye, the physical eye, is the vessel through which the koich hariyah functions. You can't see through your ears, you only see through your eyes. And the ears are the koich for which the koich hashmiyah functions. And the moyach, the physical brain, is what embodies, what holds the seichel. And it's a hierarchy. The higher the koyach, the more sophisticated and the more intricate and the more refined the particular organ has to be in order to embody that koyach. So for example, the feet only have the koyach atunua, so the feet are less sophisticated than the brain. They're less intricate, they're less detailed, they're less evolved, they're less refined. The feet only have a koyach atunua. The brain has far more koyach, it's a far stronger koyach, a far higher koyach. The koyach of seichel is far higher than the koyach of tenuah, which is merely to be mobile and move. Seichel is far more advanced. So therefore, that which embodies the seichel, which is the brain, is more refined and more detailed, more specific, and so on. Even in koyach of tenuah itself, There's a difference between the hands and the feet. The feet can move, but they can't write, they can't play the piano. So the hands are more delicate than the feet in the way that they embody and they contain the koyach atzmuah of the hands. Now here's the question. Here's the question. We've established that the koyches hanefesh are each mislabesh in a different part, a different aver of the guf, and the aver has to live up to the refined level of that koyach. Chas v'shalom, if somebody's organ should be ruined or punctured, chas v'shalom, somebody should have his eyes poked, then he won't be able to see. Because it's only when it's perfect, and it's only when it lives, when it's with all its detail, that it can embody the koyach of the ear. This is all true for the koyches hanefesh. Now let's take a look at the chayus of the nefesh. The chayus of the nefesh is simply the fact that you are alive. The fact that you are alive, the very being of you, who you are, your living being, is your chayus. The chayus of the nefesh is equally there in every part of the guf. In the head, in the feet, in the toes, it's there all over the place. It's not divided, it's not separate, it doesn't differentiate between one part of the guf and another part of the guf. Koyches hanefesh will distinguish between the, whether the organ is suitable for them, but the chayus hanefesh is there equally all over. Now the chayus of the nefesh is higher than the koyches hanefesh. The chayus hanefesh is higher because the koyches are of service to the chayus. The chayus is who you really are. So why is it, here's the question, why is it that the chayus can be in the foot and in the leg, whereas that which is lower, the seichel for example, or the emotions, or the koyach hariyah, are not capable of being, of permeating, of being embodied in the lower elements of the guf? That's the question. Everybody understands that seichel cannot function in your finger. Why? Because seichel is higher than the finger. The finger is not sophisticated, it's not advanced enough to embody the seichel. So how come the finger can embody the chayus hanefesh, which is even higher than any of the koyches hanefesh? Being that the koyches hanefesh are only servants and utilities, they're only means for the chayus to function. So what's the answer? The answer is like this. Rabbi say HaKadosh Baruch Hu was matbiya in the teva of the Bria, that the person has who he is, and the person has additional things that are of use to him. Who are you? You are the chayus hanefesh. That's who you are. Even a person who can't see is still there. He's still a person. If a person can't hear, he's still there. Right? Chas v'shalom, if a person doesn't have any seichel, there are people like that, so they're still there. They're still there. But if the chayus hanefesh should disappear, the person is no longer there. So therefore, the chayus hanefesh defines who you are. The koyches hanefesh are only utilities for that which you are. They are secondary to your identity, to your mahus, to who you really are. Therefore, says the Zohar, the chayus hanefesh, who you are, is not limited, and it penetrates every part of your guf. Every part of your being is influenced, is affected by the chayus hanefesh, because that is who you are. It's not secondary to you, but it actually defines who you are. This is all a mashal. Whether or not we understood the mashal is not important. Let's look at the nimshal for a moment. Rabbi Isai, what is Parshas B'chukosai telling us? What is Parshas B'chukosai telling us? Parshas B'chukosai tells you as follows. If it would be the case that the schar for limud ha-Torah would be limited only to ruchnis, only to ruchnis. In other words, your neshama is affected through your limud ha-Torah. Your madregos are affected through your limud ha-Torah. Your mayach, your lev, your nefesh is affected and influenced by your limud ha-Torah. So Torah would therefore have only an impact on the higher elements within a man. Not on his guf, certainly not on his tree and his field. If that were to be the case, then Torah would not be one with who you are. The psukim tell us over here that the Torah is kihen chayenu. The Torah is one with who a Yid is. And as such, it affects and it influences every aspect of a Yid. Even his Gashmias. Your Gashmias is affected by Torah because Torah is not secondary to your identity. Torah is who you are. And as such, it influences every part of you. Not only every part of you, but every part of the world that was allocated to you. So if Torah can influence your field, if Torah can influence your tree, it's only because Torah is bound, is one with who you really are. That's why Torah affects even the Gashmius. It doesn't only affect the spiritual realms, because Torah has the ability to go beyond any limitation, because Torah is part of our essence. Torah is one with our essence. This, as the Zohar, is the meaning of Parshas Bechul Koisei. So for a Baal Madrega, for someone who learns Torah Lishma, it's not that this pasuk is going to make him learn Torah because as a result his tree will produce more fruit. This Parshas Bechul Koisei, as well as the Iker of Schar V'Einesh, tells you the Koyach of Torah. Torah influences the world to the farthest level, because Torah is one with who we are. Torah is not something secondary. Torah is the essence, and therefore it affects every part of our existence. And even it even affects that which we were given to interact with in the world, because that is who we are. Rabbi Isai, this is actually, Merum is in the words in B'chukai Zei Teleichu. We all know, in B'chukai Zei Teleichu, it's Mesech Yishmeir Basisa Moisam. Had the Pasuk only had the first words, if it wouldn't have said V'smitzvoy Zei Tishmeiru, if it would have said in B'chukai Zei Teleichu, how would we touch the words in B'chukai Zei Teleichu? How would we touch it? What would it have referred to? To mitzvahs. It would have referred to mitzvahs. Mitzvahs. Rashi says, he brings from the Torah's Kainim, since the Pasuk goes on and says, V'smitzvoy Zei Tishmeiru, so it's already referring to all mitzvahs. So the word b'chukosai, which is a specific type of mitzvah, because we know there are three types of mitzvahs, eidus, chukim, and mishpatim. The word b'chukosai normally would refer to the chukim of Torah. But it later says that it's ma'isai kishmaidu, which covers for all the mitzvahs of Torah. So b'chukosai can't refer to mitzvahs as such. Therefore, says Rashi, b'chukosai b'hechrich has to refer to limud ha-Torah, and specifically, ameilim ba-Torah. Ask Torah Chaim, why is Chuka an example for Amelus Batayr? What would you say if you have three categories, right? You have Eidus, Chukim, and Mishpatim. Mishpatim are the logical mitzvahs, not to steal, not to kill. The Gemara says we would learn them from the Teva Abriya. Eidus are things that we can relate to logically, but we wouldn't have concluded that on our own. It's an Eidus. Shabbos is an Eidus on Ma'aseh Bereishis. It gives testimony to the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu rested on the seventh day. Pesach is an Eidus for Yetzias Mitzrayim. Shavuot is an Eidus for Matan Torah. It makes sense to us. Right? It makes sense to us. Like, you have a monument that testifies that something took place in this particular space. So you have a monument that tells you something significant happened in this particular time. The Torah wants us to give a recognition to what happened. It's an Eidus. Then you have Chukim. Chukim we don't understand at all. Paraduma, we don't understand this. Limud HaTorah, which one of the three would you apply it to? Under which category should it fall? Eidus, Chukim, or Mishpatim? Eidus? Maybe even Mishpatim? Torah is logical. The learning of Torah is a process that is something sensible. You see, there's a difference between Eidus, Chukim, and Mishpatim in the way that we relate to it as well. Which things do you do with more of a geschmack, with more of a passion? Something that you understand, something that makes sense, or something that's superimposed on you because that's the decree and you have to follow it? Which one is greater? Which one is more involved? Which one pulls you in more? For which one do you have more feeling? With which do you have more of a connection? That which makes sense to you. Makes sense? So you're all involved. It's not only your hands and feet that are doing it, your mind, your heart are all involved in the performance. Because you relate to it. See, Mitzrayim, a Seder. Mitzvahs that don't make any sense, you do that because you're a good Yidah, because it's the Rasan Hashem, but not because it relates to you. On that level, Torah should be the top of the list. The furthest from Chukim. Torah is something that's Geshmak. Torah is something that's very pleasurable. Why do we refer to the Torah as a Chukah? We know that it's referring to Torah because it says that it's Meshay Tishmayr. So therefore it's not referring to Mitzvah, it's referring to Torah. But why would the choice word for referring to Torah be Chukosai? So, the Reb Chaim gives a pshat, and I'll get to it in a minute. But there's another pshat that says like this. That Chuko is also Miloshein Chakika. What? Engraved. What's the difference between something that is written and something that's engraved? On the Luchos, the Oisios were engraved. In the Sefer Torah, the Oisios are Ksiva. What's the difference between the two? What's the difference between the two? The Oisios Aksiva can be erased. You can remove it. You can't remove Oisios Achika unless you destroy the stone. You can't keep the stone intact and remove the Oisios Achika, especially if it's Chokuk, Meir, Leir. Can't do that. Oisios Aksiva can be erased. Why is that the case? Why can Oisios Aksiva be undone and Oisios Achika cannot be undone? Because Oisios Aksiva are imposed upon the cloth. There are two separate entities. You have the ink and you have the cloth, and the ink is attached to the cloth and it can be removed. Oisis achika penetrate the very being on which it's written. It's one. It's one with that upon which it is written. It is not something secondary. It's not two entities that are brought together. Chakika means that it is engraved in the very thing upon which it's written, and therefore it cannot be erased. It can't be erased. Now here's the question. Let me ask you, coming back to our definition of what the difference between Eidos, Chukim, and Mishpatim, which one is deeper? Chukim or Mishpatim? Chukim or Eidos? It would seem that Eidos and Chukim and Mishpatim are one with you. They involve you. You are connected. You are bound. You can be intimately attached to that mitzvah. Whereas Chukim are superimposed upon you. So Chukim is not Chakika. Chukim should be more of a Ksiva than Chakika. Chukim should be more of a ksiva than chakika. Chukim are something external. Do it because I told you. Right? If you're pulling up a suitcase up a big cliff for someone else, you're not really attached to the action. If you're pulling your diamonds up to your house, you're excited about it. So in one it's an action that's being imposed upon you. In another, it's an action that's coming from the deepest parts of your being. Rabbi Isai over here, Lita Grisa Yesoit. What is the deepest part of a yid? What is the deepest part of a yid? We're assuming that the deepest part within you is your seichel, is your midos. If you feel for the mitzvah, if you understand the mitzvah, you've reached the deepest part of your being. But that's not the case. There's something that runs a lot deeper than your knowledge and your understanding. What is that something? That something is an inherent submission to the Ratzon Hashem that is dear within every single yid. Precisely when you're doing it without understanding, precisely when you're doing it in spite of no feelings, that is when you're reaching into the deepest resources within your heart. The deepest connection to HaKadosh Baruch. Because if you ask the person who understands, why are you doing it, they'll tell you, because that makes sense to me. And why are you doing it? Because I feel good about it. If you ask the person who has no feeling at this moment, or has no understanding, he'll tell you, I'm doing it because this is the Ratzon Hashem. The performance of Ratzon Hashem is the truth of a yid. A desire to do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, not because of myself, but in spite of myself. Not as an extension of myself, but as a means of transcending and going beyond myself. That's where the Chakika is. That's where the Chakika is. Where do you reach the deepest part of a person? When you discover the Nas of an Ishma in a Yid. When you discover the Kabbalah's Oil Malchus Shamayim in a Yid. That is deeper than the person's Seichel or his Midos. That is where you reach the Chayus HaNefesh. That's where you reach that part of him which is one with himself. Which is one with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why that's the Oisis HaChakika. Now normally you would say, people would wish it upon themselves, Halavai, that I should have it within me, that I should perform the mitzvahs that are chukim with the same geschmack and with the same enthusiasm and excitement as I perform mitzvahs that are mishpatim and eidos that I understand, that I feel. You know, I should do a mitzvah that I'm not interested in as much as I do the mitzvahs that I am interested in. That's true on one level. But there's another level in which you say the opposite. You say, Halavai, that in spite of my understanding and my feeling and my emotion, I shouldn't lose touch with that innocence within me that says, Ratzon Hashem, full stop. You don't want to get rid of the Seichel and the Midas, because that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. But it shouldn't be at the expense of a submission to Ratzon Hashem. And this is the difference between Ksiva and Achika. Ksiva can be removed. Your Seichel is not reliable. Your Seichel can think otherwise tomorrow. You can think one thing today and another thing tomorrow. If the basis and the foundation of it all is only Seichel, then who knows? Seichel is more than other things. It's more than just your whims or your emotions. But it's never absolute. And midas can come and go as well. But the neshama of the yid, which is a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a desire to do Ratzon Hashem full stop, that's there to stay. That can never be removed. That's permanent. That's there loyalam. Says the Rechaim, that this is what the Pasuk is saying, and this is why Rashi says, Ameilus Batayra. Why doesn't Rashi say, Lima Batayra? If you can't refer to mitzvahs, it refers to Lima Batayra. Because we're talking Bechukaisai, Bechukaisai Milashin Chakika. When does the Torah become Chakuk in you? When it's Ameilus. What does Ameilus mean? Ameilus means that you're going against your natural inclination. If it's purely an exercise of indulging yourself, which is great, we wish for ourselves that we should always indulge in Limud HaTorah with the greatest level of enjoyment and pleasure and excitement. But if you want Chakika, you have to be able to go even beyond that. Even beyond that. If you're penetrating into the depths of Torah, or the amount of time that you spend in Torah, is all in compliance with how much you enjoy it, then you haven't reached the level of Ameilus. Ameilus is when you go beyond that. When you go beyond that, you're giving expression to a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that is deeper than your interests, that is deeper than the reward that it gives you. You're connecting with the oneness that you have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Chakika, where it's Chokuk in you, because it's part of you. Not because it's something that you've embraced or taken on. You've discovered, you've uncovered, you've brought forth within yourself the Chelek of your Neshama, which has a Chakika of Torah in it. Which is inseparable from Torah. Not only does it desire Torah and enjoy Torah, but it cannot live without Torah. That's Chakika. And that is expressed through Ameilus. That is expressed through Ameilus B'Torah. That's why the Torah says, B'chukoisai Teileichu. Sure, Rabbi Isai, my very deep, sincere apologies if I went a little bit up into the heavens today. But we have to come down to Aretz, right? Yeah. Nosna Aretz Yehula. Thank you very much.